making a long story as short as I know how, we as a family, our daughters are all grown up. Two of them are married. We have grandchildren. The whole family wanted to get together this summer and have a quality family time with each other. One lives in Maryland. One lives in California. We live in Texas. Another daughter lives in Texas. So we all flew to Delaware to go on the beach and have a quality family time. And Marilyn and I were praying. He says, "Lord, we'd like to have a quality time with our family." I'm not sure I would pray that way again because I'm only kidding. This is the best thing that's happened. And it was quality time. We got down there, our first day on the beach, and it was 3 o'clock or so in the afternoon, and I'm on one of these real low recliners that's about that far away from the sand. And he says, "Okay, let's pack up and let's go." And there was a pop-up umbrella that you drive down into the sand, and there was one of them. And what I did is I started pulling myself up off this low beach chair, and I pulled up and I got straight up, and that's the last thing I remember. And I am told, see, this is all second. I'm told that my daughter, out of the corner of her eye, she saw her, what she calls Big Daddy, better known as AKA Elephant, just get shorter. And I've learned a lot of things in medical now, that if you're fainting, you tend to go down sideways or you hold on to something. But I was gone. And what happens is your knees just give way. So what you just go right down on your knees, the rest of your body is straight, and then you just fall over. And so that tells me that I was gone then, because I don't remember anything. It was just like that. And the miracle started then. Joanne, our middle daughter, is an RN, so she knew I was in trouble. And so she started saying, "Okay, you get the emergency responders, you get the lifeguards, you do this, you do that," and I'm just out of it. And all kinds of activities started. I'm told now, I used to be in the fire service, I've seen some things, but I'm purple from about my chest up. Now, it's one thing, you have CPR training. What do you look for? You look for the nails that are blue. You do this and that. There's no mistake when you would see me, because I'm already, the time is ticking. I'm already purple this way. I'm already blue. Joanne opens up one of my eyes, and she tells me later that she's never seen an eye so dead and so blue. Now, that means the heart stopped. I'm not breathing. The internal organs aren't getting oxygen. There's all kinds of things going on in my body. So that's, I'm going to call it my beach experience in Delaware. And they took me to the hospital. I died in the hospital also, and I died pretty hard from what I can understand in the hospital. And again, I'm blue. My organs are shut down. My kidneys are whatever they do after they shut down and they start, consuming themselves or doing something, and there's bile or red stuff coming out and different things. So I know, based on after the event, people telling me that I died twice at least, and I died what I'm going to call hard. I should have all kinds of damage in my body. Kidneys, maybe they shouldn't be working. Liver, maybe it shouldn't be working. There's all kinds of things going on in this period of time that says, unless God intervenes, I'm dead. I'm dead on the beach. I'm dead in the hospital. And we'll go into the rest of the things as I share what happened to me. I am told my body fights. And I claim all our bodies will fight when you're in a situation like I was in. It's trying to sit up. I learned that it tries to sit up because the body inherently knows that if it sits up, it can get more air into its lungs. I never realized that. So here I am. I don't know anything. I was gone. But in some of those periods, of where they were getting air into me and, resuscitating me and doing different things, body was ripping off all the things that they had me in the air, just feeding. I was a Christmas tree with all kinds of things in me. And the body was fighting as it knew how to do, trying to sit up, trying to get free, trying to get air, everything else. And if you looked at my body during that time, it would, I'm going to use the word, a nice word, it would astound you what the body will do trying to stay alive. Meanwhile, I'm not there. And there's four things I would like to share with you. One, you may have received an email or a copy of what I'm now calling the wave, because one of the things that happened on the beach is some went to the hospital, others had to take care of the kids and so on. So one of my son-in-law's, his job was to take care of the small children. But his other job was to call the church, call this person, call that person. So he was on the phone making phone calls. And from what I understand, within 1 or 2 hours, the phone calls were across the whole nation. So I know that was going on as the ambulance was taking me to the hospital. And somewhere in there, there's a voice that says, "Come on, I want to show you something." Now, my body's down here doing fits. I don't feel any of that. It's peaceful. It's quiet. There's no pain. No nothing. It's just, I'm gone, and I'm going to say I'm out of my body. I don't know how else to describe it. And he says, "Come on, I want to show you something." And I don't know what to expect in all this, except that I'll tell you, it's not a dream. I know what dreams are like, but what I went through is not a dream. It's a whole other thing that's going on with me. And no getting on a plane or no anything. You're just there. So let's say I'm down on the earth and all of a sudden I'm up in the sky and I'm up high enough that I can see the outline of the United States. And I'm looking down, but it's not the regular outline, if you're looking from a satellite or anything, because, I don't see mountains, I don't see anything else. But I see all these tabs laying down flat on the earth, the United States. It's just one tab after another. Call it matchsticks, different lengths, different widths. Just a bunch of these tabs that were laying down on the ground of the United States. And I don't know what that is. And all of a sudden I see tabs starting out in the California or this coast area. I just see some tabs starting to come up. And when those tabs came up, the tabs in front of them came up just quickly right after it, and the tabs after that. And these tabs just started raising up and rippling across the United States. And then it would pull back. And then there'd be something starting in the middle or something, and it would ripple this way and ripple that way. And I'm looking at this, and it was orchestrated. It was so beautiful. It was choreographed. It was beyond my comprehension how choreographed and how beautiful. All these tabs rising up and going down and rising up and going down and just rippling. For Bob Percelli, it's like when you're at the ball game and you do the whatever they call that thing and it ripples. What is it? Yeah, the wave. That's why I call it the wave. Okay. It just rippled back and forth. And I must admit, I'm impressed. But now, what does it mean? He says, would you like to know what this means? And the voice says, it's the prayers that are going up for you. And I said to the Lord, I says, Lord, I don't even know that many people. And he says, but I do. So I got, you know, I guess I'm going to call it my first lesson is as the church grows up, there's a message, and it has to do with wake up and grow up, is what I believe the Spirit's saying to the church, and you'll understand more of that as I talk, I guess. But in this wave, it says, it's the prayers that are going up for you. And I started realizing it says, as the church matures and the Holy Spirit starts coordinating our prayers at the right time, at the right place, and everything else that are going up, the Father's waiting to hear the prayers that are coming out of our hearts, the desires of our hearts. But a mature saint no longer has his desires in there. It's the Father's desires. So then as you see the Christ in you starting to function, you're going to see the Koryeph prayers going up to the Father, and the Father's just waiting for them to answer them. Why? Because it's His will. So that was my first out-of-the-body experience from what I can figure out, or the one that, anyways, first and me share. So that's, I call it the wave. Now, I come to what I've called the corridor. And I think some of you have read it, but the corridor, again, it's not a dream. I'm convinced it's not a dream, but I can't explain how, you know, I can say that, except that I know it's not a dream. And again, I found myself there. And one of the other things that I discovered is when you go into these, at least for me, you come in perhaps with a piece of information that you need for whatever you're going to be shown or whatever you go through. So when I found myself there, the piece of information that came with me is I have just passed through death. I'm on the other side of death. And I found myself in a corridor. And I guess what the corridor looks like, but it was translucent, it was lit up. I never saw a big bright light at the end of the tunnel, that kind of thing. So I missed that part of what other people have seen. But I'm in this corridor, and I am tired. I am so tired. And I can feel my shoulders down. And I'm walking slowly. And the piece of information I have is I've gone through death. I'm on the other side. And look back, and the corridor isn't straight. It curves off maybe 20 feet, so you really can't see past that. But I know my death is, you know, just around that corner. But I'm going this direction, and there's a curve in the corridor going this way, so I can't see more than maybe 20 feet in front of me. But I feel that I'm walking very slowly, and I'm wasted. I am so tired. I am just so tired. And I look down, and I don't see anything. And my first reaction, being an engineer, I guess, is it says, well, if I don't have a body, why do I feel like I'm walking? And why are my shoulders down like this if I don't have any shoulders? So, you know, it kind of, you know, is an interesting experience. That's another sub-experience within the experience. And you start realizing, it says, okay, let's say my soul, my spirit is here. My body's down there doing all kinds of things. I'm up here. I'm disconnected from my body. I don't know what's going on with my body. But it looks like there's kind of a carryover where I guess I needed for my own sanity, if not anything else, to feel like, you know, my shoulders are down and to feel like I'm walking slowly. But I don't have any body. And I stopped, and this voice just be, you know, to the left and just behind me says something. But I have to tell you about the voice. It was, I'm going to call it a man's voice. It can be a woman's voice too, but this was a man's voice. And it was, had compassion in it. It knew my situation. It was the most beautiful voice I've ever heard. If you think about what kind of voice do I want to hear, let alone in that situation, that has all the characteristics that you want in a, you know, someone talking with you, that voice had it. Never heard any voice like that. So smooth, so compassionate, so compelling, so logical, so anything you want, put your own, what you're looking for in there. This voice had it. And the voice says to me, congratulations. You made it through. Well, actually, I know I'm on the other side of death. I know I'm tired. And here's this voice saying, congratulations, you made it through. Well, that made me feel a little better. You know, you like to be congratulated. It's something like a well done, but the word was congratulations. And the voice starts saying to me, he says, you know, if you go back, well, I know what the voice is talking about because back is back towards where I died. And if I go back, because I'm going this direction, he says, you know, if you go back, you're going to be a vegetable. You're going to be blind. I don't know what happened to me at the beach. I do not know why, you know, I died. I don't know. And here's this knowing voice telling me that if I go back, I'm going to be a vegetable and I'm going to be blind. Now, later hindsight, and I confess the reaction then, was what we call your quality of life is going to be nothing. Now, Marilyn and I talk from time to time saying we don't want to be a vegetable. All right. The question is, when do you pull the plug? And it's a bracelet you can wear. It says DNR on it. It says do not resuscitate. Or it's something you carry in your wallet. We talked about it. We really, you know, don't want to be a vegetable. Let me go. So we never did anything about it. But when this voice said, you're going to be a vegetable and you're going to be blind, it struck right at the quality of life issue that I claim both believers and unbelievers go through right now, just like Marilyn and myself. So I have the quality of life being put, and all I have to do is just keep walking, and I'll find rest. My reaction was, but God isn't done with me yet. And yet it is so desirable. I can't explain, except maybe by emotion. I can't explain how desirable it was to me just to keep walking. I'm tired. I'm really tired. I really don't care to go through a quality of life that says I'm a vegetable and I'm blind. And what comes out is God isn't done with me yet. And then when I said that the first time, I don't think it was audible, but something said something to me. It says, that isn't your friend. that's your enemy. And I must admit, that took me back because, quite frankly, I always believed once you died, right? Yeah, you're safe. You're safe. You can relax now, right? There's no threats. There's no temptations. There's no nothing coming your way because you're dead, right? You're physically dead. So here I find myself in a situation. My death is back there. And here's this voice, so smooth and everything else, so logical, just keep walking. You're okay. You don't want to go back there. Just keep walking. And this, I'm going to say voice, and don't know where it came from, yet I do, says it's not your friend, it's your enemy. So then the voice says, you really want to go through death again? You really want to go through that again? Well, in my condition, you know, it's not academics anymore. I'm there and I am just so tired. I am so tired. And I was so, even though this voice said it's not your friend, the appeal of just continuing was so real, so strong, it would have been so easy just to say, I want to go rest. And what I said to that voice again, it says, God isn't finished with me yet. I have not finished my race. And when I said that, Carter's gone. The voice is gone. It's over. It's just over. I'm off to something else. And from what I can figure out, that happened in the hospital when I was dead in room 2, code blue. And I said, God isn't finished with me yet. Retrospect, welcome to Job. I don't know what's going on with me, and I don't know what lies ahead of me. All I know is, I'm coming to understand that it is very likely that the accuser before our Father basically said something like this. If you give Bob Taylor the choice of quitting his race and going to his rest in a special circumstance called he died, he went through all kinds of horror, and set up this corridor experience, that he will elect not to finish his race. He'll elect to take door number 1, the easy way. So I see Job in it. And I also see the temptation of Christ in this. That as in the wilderness, if I can say that, I was in unfamiliar territory. And everything in my body, you know, like 40 days worth of not eating or whatever, everything in me, you know, said this is a lot easier than going back through death and going through it again and being a vegetable and being blind. I claim in retrospect, I passed the test. But now I have another confession to make. That after I left the corridor, and it's just like that, I'm a little, I use the word tick, but that's too strong of a word. I'm going to use the word upset. I'm upset with the Lord. And the reason I'm upset with the Lord, and this is what I told him. I says, Lord, I was all alone. I was all alone with that voice. Where were you? Why weren't you there? And the Lord, in a pretty nice voice, said to me, I was there. And I said, Lord, obviously I didn't see you, but I knew there's another thing going on. You just get answers besides a voice, you know. And it was, and I felt, I'm going to say, ashamed. Because here I teach about Christ in you. And here I have an opportunity to experience Christ in you and what's going on. And I missed it. But I got a good lesson out of it. He was there. He was in me. He says, I was in you. And I started realizing the Christ in you and you become so one, you really can't separate them anymore. At least the, you know, part of you. So now, you know, I thought I was answering, you know, Bob Taylor without the Christ in me answering, but God isn't done with me yet. I'm coming to realize that as you grow in the Lord, there's more things going on in you than perhaps you realize, and that your response is not your mental response, but it's the sword of the Lord and of Gideon as a teaching. But it's one where the Christ in you, you can't tell which is which anymore. So that's I call it an insight or whatever that I never had before, because I would figure I would know, you know, when the Christ in me was doing something and, you know, when I was doing something. But it appears it becomes so much one that you really can't separate. Then all kinds of chapter and verses open up. So I'm close as I can figure. I'm on my way back, if I can use that word, to my body. And a little bonus got thrown in. The Father says to me, he says, my middle daughter, Joanne, has been crying out to me. And I've been waiting for her to cry out and ask me, and I'm going to answer her prayer. Now, that doesn't mean other people weren't praying for me. But, you know, the Father was looking, you know, that before he answered the prayer, he was looking for my Joanne to be crying out to him. Now, I don't know what, at that point, what Joanne is crying out for, except that Joanne is crying out to the Lord. The Lord heard her cry, and he's answering her prayer. Don't know anything more than that, and then I'm back in my body as close as I can figure, and then I guess the heart starts beating. I don't know. All I know is that I can see, you know, changes in there as a result of going through the corridor. To continue with Joanne, my daughter, about 2 weeks later, I'm talking with her on the telephone after kind of getting home. I started telling her about what I believe, you know, God was, you know, said to me on, you know, I'll use it on my word back, on my way back. And I told her that. And if I had a video phone, it blew her away. Because I didn't know anything, what she was doing. I don't know what's wrong with my body or anything else. And she said, I don't know if she cried, but anyway, obviously it caught her. And it caught her square because she was. As a matter of fact, I learned from Marilyn. She's in the hospital. And she was crying out loud when she was crying out to the Lord, Lord, save his mind. Start realizing I died from clots. She's an RN. She's seen a lot of people die from clots. What happens is it not only stops your lungs and it stops your heart and all, but you run the risk that there are clots running around in your body. And what they do is they go up to the brain and you have stroke, 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 stroke. Because I had clots in spades. And Joanne knows that. It's one thing for me to get through where my heart starts beating and my lungs start breathing air and so on. It's another thing for all my internal organs to not be damaged. It's another thing for my heart not to be damaged. And she recognizes that one of the threats is the clots go up into the brain. And you may or may not die, but if you don't die, you're a vegetable. So here she's crying out, and the Father told me that he's going to answer her prayer, and I didn't know what she was praying. All I know is I got that, and now I hear it actually happened. So for whatever that's worth, there's all kinds of things going on in a realm that you usually don't even get a little hint what's going on. So I'm breathing. My heart's pumping. I'm still critical. All kinds of different things happen. I was in the hospital almost 3 weeks. And during the last week, they just bother you all the time. They're taking blood out of you. They're checking, they wake you up to see if you're asleep. It's just horrible. It's just horrible. And I had a lot of pain, and it has to do with hemorrhaging and everything else in my right eye and, behind my right eye. So I had pain that, narcotics and all the other stuff they're pumping in just didn't get rid of. And they had to operate on my eye because it was the size of Marilyn's fist and, little subtle things like that. But I'm coming out of it, and I'm off the heavy drugs that, are supposed to knock out the pain. But I have trouble waking up. And here they are. They're waking you up all the time. And when they wake you up, it took everything in me just to, to get to the point that says, who am I? Where am I? What am I doing? What's happening? It took all the energy that was left in me just to, to stir myself up enough that I could wake up enough to open my eyes to see if, the nurse wants to take blood or, whatever is going on. So somebody's waking me up at 3:00 in the morning. And I'm struggling, trying to wake up enough to, realize who I am and, go through this whole thing. And I finally get my eyes open and I look and, I can't see anybody. But I know somebody woke me up. They're waking me up. So I look, see what anybody on the right, anybody on the left. I can't see anybody. And I'm saying, I know somebody woke me up. I know somebody woke me up. And I'm enough awake to be able to realize that. So here I am struggling with, I can't, who woke me up? I'm okay, I've gotten myself awake. Where did you go? And right before my eyes, I had a flash of what I call a ticker tape. That's a kind of a piece of paper that's long and narrow, and on it there's typing, one line typing. And this ticker tape went right past my eyes in less than a second, as close as I can figure. And what was on the ticker tape was the 23rd Psalm. And even though it happened so fast that, you shouldn't be able to read it, I could read it. As a matter of fact, the ticker tape slowed down at the beginning and it slowed down at the end. And so the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, was slower. And surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, was slower. But the whole thing went before my eyes in, I say, less than a second. And yet I was able to read it, know what it was and everything else, and I knew it slowed down in those two places. So the ticker tape goes by me, and then there's nothing. And there's still no one there, and, Lord, where are you? I mean, there's just nothing. It's over. So I figure, well, let me think about, the area that slowed down. So I started to think. All I did was just start to think about the Lord. And up pops the ticker tape The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. It's right in front of me. And the ticker tape, which is a piece of paper in my mind, the ticker tape is right in front of me. And that ticker tape divided in half, and it opened up like two doors. And I can see in, you know, further. I can see through, you know, through where that ticker tape was, through the doors. I could see a lot further in. Now, I didn't see anything specific. But the voice asked me, says, how deep do you want to go? And I flunked my test. Because I knew that the question was, how deep do you want to go? Do you want the mind of Christ? So if you go to the depth, you're going to have the mind of Christ. And another true confession. I could not answer. I would not, I guess. I just didn't want to answer. Because I know the politically correct answer is, Lord, I want to go the full depth. I want your mind. And yet, this kid knew that if I was taken to that depth at that point, and I think it was possible, I was not prepared to handle that. And that was to my shame. So what I did is I didn't answer. I couldn't say I want to go the deepest. And I guess all I was thinking is that please take me to the depth that I can handle. And didn't say anything. So he started showing me some things. And it appears it's right where I'm able to handle it. So his mercy, was there. The Lord is my shepherd. And I've shared this with Bob and all, but the Lord is my shepherd. And then he says, if I'm not your shepherd, you don't have my promises. So you think about the 23rd Psalm, you think about other, things, it says, he has to be your shepherd. Well, being he's your shepherd, it's life anyway. But we choose every day, whether he's our shepherd or whether he's not. So the thing that got me was, says, if I'm not your shepherd, you don't have the promises. Never heard that before. I never got into Psalm 23 that much, quite frankly. But, here's something that, is life now to me. And then the next thing I know, I'm at the end again, at the end. And I believe the Lord started playing games with me like I play games with other people. And it's always a lot more fun when you're playing games with other people than somebody playing with you. So the Lord asked me a question. He says, what are the three promises here? Well, I know that's a trick question. It's probably something Brother Thompson would do to somebody. I know it's a trick question because I know there's only two promises there. It surely isn't one of the promises. So I find myself talking to the Lord, telling him what surely means. And I says, surely means a certain fact, you go through the dictionary definition of what surely means, and it's going to happen. And I didn't get any response back, so I figured I'd get a gold star on that one. And then we have goodness and mercy. Well, Lord, there's two promises, goodness and mercy. And what I got, again, was, I'm going to call it more revelation, at least to me, is it has to do with goodness and mercy pursuing after you. It's the Christ in you that is going to show goodness and mercy to others. I never thought of it that way. I always thought, yeah, well, it was promises to you. In other words, you're going to get a blessing. You know, bless me, give me this, give me that. And yet, if you think about it, the servant of the Lord, right, is going to show goodness and mercy to others. The Christ in you is going to show goodness and mercy to others. Then Psalms 23 starts opening up and it says it's a picture of Christ. He's a servant. He shows goodness and mercy to others. And if Christ is in us, how much more is the expectation of the normal Christian walk that we show goodness and mercy to others? Now, I think it's interesting because Audrey was in Luke this morning and she was talking about the parable of the prodigal son. Because I claim that also fits goodness and mercy. A parable, you know, takes wisdom that comes from God to understand it. It's not there. It takes, you know, God showing you what a parable means. So it means you have to have eyes that see and ears that hear if you want to understand what the parable is saying. And the only way you're going to understand what the parable is saying is if God shows it to you. And it's revelation. So the prodigal son. The prodigal son was the oldest son, the youngest son. He wanted his inheritance. It came out this morning. So the inheritance got divvied out, and the prodigal son got his inheritance, and the older brother, I claim, you know, looks like there's two brothers, gets double portion. And the reason the older brother gets double portion is he's responsible for the family and the daughters that didn't get married and, you know, different things. So there's a double portion in there, but there's also a responsibility that the older brother has. So here, I'm coming out of Psalm 23, and what was the older brother's problem? He wouldn't go in and celebrate, he wouldn't do this and everything else. He has the double portion, he's responsible, like if his brother comes back. What was wrong with the older brother? He had no mercy. If that's true, watch other chapter and verses start showing up. The expectation is goodness and mercy just follows you because Christ is in you. Oh, how are we doing on time? Okay. The heavy one, which I really had a hard time with, and Lord's doing better. And this is for the church. And it has to do with eyes to see, ears to hear. And it's serious. I found myself in a dark place. And usually you think dark is you can't see anything. There's no light. Somebody turned the lights out. This darkness was any sense you have, hearing, smell, touch, wind blowing, you know, you feel like there's somebody around you. I don't know how to explain it. But by any sense that you have available to you, it's dark. There's nothing there. You have no idea what's next to you, if there is anything next to you. And I found myself in this darkness where my senses, anything I had at, you know, disposal, could not figure out what's around me, if anything. I'm just there. And it's dark, and I may be by myself, I don't know. But I really didn't feel uncomfortable in it. It's just, I'm at peace, but I can't tell what's around me. And it feels like, and I can't, by the way, I have a hard time putting, you know, any kind of time on anything. So I don't know how long, you know, I'm in this darkness, but it feels like I've been in it for a while. And then no announcement, no bugles, no nothing. Sorry. This white light starts shining on an area that was there, and the white light was it was just a cr-
crisp white with maybe a little blue tinge, for whatever that's worth, that was illuminating, but it was a dim illumination. It wasn't like it was a real bright light shining on what I was about to see. But it was still white. It wasn't like it was a dull glow or anything else. It was still a white light. And I started seeing some tall grass. And somewhere in all this, some other lights came on. I started realizing I'm in a huge, what looks like a big valley. And there's all this tall grass and some trees and different things. It's beautiful. But I don't see anything living, although maybe there's a rustle in some of it, but I don't know, in some of the tall grass, but I really don't know. But this light starts getting brighter on this tall grass, and I'm far away from it, and yet for some reason I have the ability to see up close. And I'm far away, and the light gets brighter, and it just pulled my attention to this grass over here. And the light starts getting brighter, and I can see now the grass, and it was just crisp. It was just so clear and crisp. I've never seen, with my vision or high-definition TV or anything else, I've never seen anything so crisp of what the light was shining on. It had clarity beyond my comprehension, and I'm able to see it. And the light started getting brighter. And I noticed that now the grass, I forget what they call a grass leaf, what do they call that?
Blade,
thank you. The blade was well illuminated, but as the light got brighter, I could actually see into the blade. So not only could I see the surface, but I could see below the surface. And nothing blocked anything else from you being able to see it. In other words, I saw the top, I saw, right below, I saw further below, and the light started getting brighter. And the light ended up being bright enough that it actually went right through the blade of grass. And I could look at that, and I could see every part of that blade in three dimension. I could just see everything, and nothing blocked anything else while I'm looking at it. Well, that kind of blows an engineer's mind, too, because something ought to be blocking things. The next thing happens is another light starts shining on a tree limb. And again, I'm able to see the limb crisp, everything else. The light gets brighter. I start seeing into the limb. The light gets brighter and brighter, and I'm starting to realize it says the energy that light has to shine scares an engineer. It's got power. And I'm starting to realize that light is powerful if it wants to be. And it shines through the whole tree limb, and I can look at that tree limb, and I can look at the surface, and I can look one layer down, two layers down, and all the discolorations and the cells going together and everything else, and nothing blocks anything else. You can just see it all at the same time. Then the light shines on me. And it's shining on my arm. I'm not frightened. I should be, but I'm not frightened. And it's white, and I look, and it's so crisp. I mean, this is blurry compared to, what I was able to see with this light shining on it. And for some reason, my arm's out here. Don't know why, but I'm looking at it. I guess that's why it's there. And the light starts getting brighter. And sure enough, I can start seeing three-dimensional on my arm, and the light gets brighter. And sure enough, I can see below the dermis, epidermis, and all that. And there's blood vessels, and there's walls, and there's bone. And it finally goes right through my arm. And I'm looking at my arm, and I can see everything in my arm. The bones aren't blocking the other side, and yet I see the bones at the same time. I think the bottom line is, this light, there's no place for anything to be hidden to the eyesight. That's the thing I'm getting out of it. Right? So I'm shown this, and I know it's impossible because the bones should be blocking. You just can't see everything at the same time. You got to go around here to look, or you got to look this way, or something. In this case, you can just see the whole thing working, just doing whatever it does. That was my introduction to this area. Then more lights came on, and there were selected areas. And what I believe was happening is it was illuminating more, but your eyes were pulled to where the light was brighter and what that light was shining on. Can't tell where the light's coming from. You don't see the source of the light. The light just shines, and what it illuminates is what you see. And it's a big meadow with some trees from what I can figure. But then the light starts shining different places, and what you start seeing is faces. And you don't see any bodies. You just see a face. And where the grass was three-dimensional, and where the tree was three-dimensional, my arm was three-dimensional, all you see is what appears to be a flat face. There's no dimension in it, for whatever that's worth. But the faces have smiles. Joy. Anticipation is one of the words that really came to me. These faces are really looking forward to something. They are excited. They are smiling. They are just so filled with anticipation. That's what I saw. And there's multiple faces and multiple lights shining on these faces. And I'm just watching this happen. And the light gets brighter. And this face or faces, the face changes a little bit in its complexion, that it's no longer smiling as much as it is. It's no longer as excited as it used to be. It's, there is a change towards not being as excited, not as much anticipation. And then the light gets even brighter. And now you can start seeing that it isn't the same smile, it isn't the same anticipation. As a matter of fact, there's starting to show up what I'm going to call some surprise. They're getting surprised. And the light gets brighter. And the surprise starts turning to what I'm going to call has a tinge of fear in it. And the light gets brighter. The smile is gone. The excitement on the face and the anticipation on the face is gone. And that little tinge of fear is turning into a big tinge of fear. And the light gets even brighter. And that fear is turning to horror. Horror. And You can see the horror on the face now. And the light even got brighter. And the horror is turning into sheer horror. All I see is this flat face, multiple faces, each one with a light on, and each one of the lights got brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. And it went from anticipation and joy and everything else to the point where it is just pure horror on that face and faces. If I combine what I was shown before this happened, and I look at the lights going on, what I believe I was being shown, it's not of thus says the Lord, but what I believe I was being shown is that the light was actually exposing the person. When I came into this, into that darkness, when I was put in this situation and I was shown these things, I brought with me a piece of information that I needed to understand what I'm being shown. And that piece of information was simply the second resurrection. Based on what I saw, the faces with pure heart, the next thing that happened is the faces were gone. And I looked out there, and I didn't see any other faces. What I believe I'm seeing is, when the Lord says many, He's not kidding. He's not kidding. That what started out is they're in deception. They think everything is neat. And then as the Lord just shows them their condition, from what I can figure, they didn't get driven out, they didn't get bombed, they didn't get anything. Right? I don't know if they fled themselves, I don't know what. All I know is that they got out of there one way or another, and I was not shown that. All I know is that they were gone. And here I am looking, and I says, it's basically, Lord, how many? And it's many. Now, to me, that's a heavy one. Because along with this, and it's not spoken, but it was going on with me, it's not showing me the world. I'm being shown the church. And I'm being shown that the church is in slumber. And the church needs to wake up. And the church needs to grow up. That they might run their race in such a way that they win. And if it means being dead and thinking you're coming back as a vegetable, and you're going to be blind, and your organs aren't going to function very well, and everything else, if that is the testimony of your life for the race that's been placed before you, do it. Because there's a prize lying ahead for you that you only have access to if you run your race in such a way as to win. You don't have God's grace for the race that I'm in. But also, I don't have God's grace for the race that you're in. All I know is the Father, in His loving kindness, mercy, has given us the opportunity to run that race. And that's the race that each one of us must run, even if it cost you your life.